This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, we now bring on Abu Corrigan, who has done nothing but watch his NC State teams win, 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 win. It is a good time to be part of Wolfpack Nation because the pack is rolling, and there he is. Mr. Corrigan, good morning. How are we? No, you got it. Yeah, there you go. You got it.
I'm doing well. It's nice to know that I'm a pre-Power Hour kind of guy.
You are that.
So it's great to be with y'all today.
In fact, you are the lead. It's like a parade. You are the leader of the pre-Power Hour parade is what you are.
Yeah.
Now, listen, you just told us something that I think surprised both me and my partner. You went to Omaha for the very first time. Now, I said this the other day on radio. I've never met anybody that's gone to Omaha that returned and said, yeah, it was pretty good. Everybody that goes for the first time comes back and goes, wow, blew me away. So with that said, your first Omaha experience, you tell us.
I always wanted to have a rooting interest, right? I didn't want to go there, you know, just to see the event. I was hopeful sometime in my career that we'd be able to go. Obviously went this year, and it's just about baseball. And that was kind of the beauty of everything is you get there and it's what time do you play and tell me about your team and then you leave. And, you know, we won the first game, went out to dinner, and all anyone wanted to talk about was baseball. And then what was going on in the game after ours. And then all day Sunday, it was the same type of thing. And then Monday, of course, we go out there and play an unbelievably exciting, thrilling 1-0 game. Hmm.
Boo, here's the other thing. It also bonds the Wolfpack Nation in a lot of ways. I mean, the support that the baseball program gets, it as the athletics director, to see your women's basketball coach out there, to know your greatest basketball player is out there, to know that, you know, the generations of NC State fans are rallying to this team of 9 from 9, as Elliot says, 9 players, 9 states. It's got to do something for the athletic director to say, okay, yeah, now we are kind of in this thing together in a whole lot of ways.
But it certainly it does, but it does to everyone in Wolfpack Nation, right? You know, we're taking pride in who we are and taking pride in celebrating David Thompson and Derek Wittenberg and Wes Moore and Dave Doran doing all he can to get out there. And Kevin Keats texting me and calling me, and Braden Holloway was there. And the passion is there. We know that. We just got to focus on being the best NC State we can be. And boy, that's going to be something when we do.
Well, it's taking place as we speak. You know, the other thing that's cool, and I've always found in Omaha, is that the city, which does an incredible job welcoming everybody, but they will eventually pick, the locals will eventually jump on somebody as their team. They embrace everybody, but as this thing develops, well, there's always one team that they kind of say, hey, you know what? You're our team. And I get a sense on the phone calls that I've been getting in the afternoon show that NC State has been the one that Omaha has embraced. Did you get that sense when you were out there?
We did a couple different ways. One, by beating Arkansas, you know, who had beaten Nebraska. I think that played into a little bit. Plus, you know, I mean, red and white's red and white, brother. You know, I mean, they don't need to change any uniform. They don't need to do anything else. You know, all they need to do is learn the hand signal. We're good to go.
That's it. And it's not Texas. Let me understand. It's not Texas. It's the Wolfpack, right? There's a big difference there.
Yes, sir.
Big difference.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Hey, and here's the other thing, too. The Nebraska people are not going to pull for Texas. They're not pulling for Texas.
Ever.
Vanderbilt's one out there. Virginia's one out there. They're looking for somebody who's you know, like Fresno State a handful of years ago, Pac, they're looking for the dynasty, the destiny team, the one that's had the upsets, things like that. That's the great part of your team in many ways, Boo. And I guess what Elliot Avent means to this program in some ways, the way he's handled all of this.
It really is. And you look at all the different heroes we've had, right, throughout this. Jose Torres hitting the home run in the top of the ninth. Evan Justice comes in and shuts it down. Sam Heifeld goes up against, top five pitcher, yeah. top three pitcher, whatever it is in the next coming draft. And you look at the scoreboard at one point, and Sam's got no runs and two hits. We have one run and three hits. And it seems like the story was still about the Vanderbilt pitcher. And they just keep plugging away. And Elliott's done a great job bringing them together this year. And y'all know, I mean, Elliott lost his daddy earlier this year, as he would call him. Mm-hmm. And he's been through a lot. But, you know, we found a way to come together after a tough start. And, boy, is it great to finish strong.
We kidded around last hour, Boo, for folks that stayed up and watched last night's game, because I'm sure State fans were, because, hey, you get the winner. Here's Stanford winning all night long. They go to their ace to try to close this thing out. And really, at some point in time, with two outs and two strikes in the bottom of the ninth, you're thinking, as an NC State fan, I couldn't have scripted a better case scenario. Stanford's used their ace. Vanderbilt's gone. I don't have to deal with Rocker or Leiter, if that's the case. And Vandy comes back. We've seen unbelievable games and comebacks. And now NC State's got to deal with Vanderbilt again. But you know what? Given who you've gone through already, what you did at Arkansas, what you did at Ruston to beat a Louisiana Tech team in that place and had to sweep them to get to Arkansas and do something nobody else has done all year against those guys, to go ahead and beat Beck, you've beaten Leiter. Okay, we got to play Rocker. That's what we got to do. That's what we got to do. This team has been on a remarkable run. And tomorrow afternoon, I know everybody's going to be dialed in and ready to roll. And if you got to go beat them twice, hey, if you got to beat them again, so be it. Line them up. Let's go. You know, winning a national championship's never been easy. I don't care what the sport is. But this run that we're watching with Elliott and his guys has been unbelievable, especially given the start.
It really has. But, you know, Pat, they got to beat us.
Right.
Right. I mean, at some point, we are the one that's 2-0.
That's right.
Right now, we are the one that beat the SEC Pitcher of the Year, Pac-12 Pitcher of the Year, and Leiter, who's a consensus top three, top five pick in the Major League Draft.
Yep.
And we are that team, and we are the team that comes together, and we got a first baseman from Minnesota, a center fielder from Ohio, a catcher from Florida. You know, starting two freshman pitchers. I mean, this is a group that's stronger as one, right? You know, nine being one, and it's really a tribute to Elliott, but also to Chris Hart and Clint and the job they've done with the pitching staff, with the players, with recruiting, with everything involved in what it is. It's just a really, really exciting time for the Wolfpack. And you know, we've had a heck of a run. We really have, with women's tennis and women's cross country and women's swimming, and, you know, just kind of across the board, the job Coach Dorn's done this year, the job we've done academically. We've had the back-to-back highest GPAs we've had both the fall and the spring semester. Our students created PAC United, which is our social justice stance that's about education, awareness, and action. And, you know, I think we're going to come out of this thing financially okay as well. So, yeah, it's a great time to be a part of the pack.
All right. I want to pivot here real quick because I remember when June used to be the down month in college athletics. I remember that. It was not that long ago that June kind of was, you know, the academic calendar was over. The meetings were over. That was when a lot of people took vacation. Not a lot of vacations going now. I mean, we're talking in particular your world. Expansion of the playoff proposal. You're trying to get shoulder to shoulder at Carter-Finley this year. You need to get those full houses back that you want, not only in football, but in basketball as well. And then, hey, by the way, you're in one of those states that they're still waiting on the NIL law and legislation to come into play. So you got a lot of balls in the air. How you managing to kind of keep it in front of you, I guess?
As patiently as I can. Right. You know, you can't just kind of take on everything and not get anything done. And we got a great group of people here at NC State. We've got a top five entrepreneurial school that we're going to work with on our NIL and where that is. You know, the playoff committee. It's going to be an exciting time for me to be on that committee and be a part of that. We're going through all of our budgets. We're going through all of our personnel. And, you know, everyone here in our athletic department contributed to shortening our debt and doing everything there. So you've got the whole cultural and morale of your of all the employees. You know, we got new students coming on. It's, you know, every day it's still what I get to do, brother. It's not something that I have to do.
But just your initial reaction to the playoff expansion. Do you like what the working group came up with? Do you have an issue with anything?
I'm excited about it. As the AD at NC State, right? As the AD at NC State, I think it provides other opportunities for us, other opportunities for the league, and I'm excited about where it's going.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, and I think it's going along the path we expect it to, right? Whenever something like this happens from an expansion, any kind of expansion, there are a lot of spoons in the soup here, and everybody's kind of got to get their part. But these first two steps, Pac and I were talking yesterday, I thought once we heard about the proposal, those were almost maybe expected steps. Now, between now and September, some things could change. But the first two, nothing really surprised me there.
Yeah, I think once the rumors get out and once people start talking about it, it sure seems like it usually follows suit, right? You know, I mean, they're out there for a reason. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the devil's always in the details of everything we're going to deal with. And then, you know, I get to be on the committee that moves into this, obviously not next year, probably for a couple of years. And hopefully, maybe during my term, we'll be at that phase.
Yeah.
Where are you with season tickets for football?
We are over like 103% based on 2019 numbers.
Wow.
So the pack is ready, baby. Wow. We're ready to come back. You know, we're ready to be a part of it. And fans are fired up. We're fired up for Coach Dorn and the staff and the players. And let's stay healthy and, you know, can't wait to be. It's funny. First couple games are all night games, so we don't have to worry about the heat either.
Is there anything that's not going well for you, Boo? Because so far you haven't given us one thing. I mean, you got the greatest gig in America. I mean, financially everything is good. Baseball's rocking. Spring sports are out of sight. Season tickets through the roof. Dave Dorn's recruiting at a crazy level. They've got 4-stars guys coming. Every day there's a 4-star guy going to NC State. Is there anything that's bothering you? Anything other than this interview?
No, I was going to say, I had to get my hair cut a couple of weeks ago because it got so long. But, you know, besides that, hey, this is something we get to do every day. Couldn't be happier about it. We're going to wake up on the sunny side of the street every day.
I like it.
You know, and just kind of keep leaning forward.
That's the right attitude. I love it.
And one day we're all going to do a show together and show everybody that none of us wear socks.
Oh, yeah. Not a shot. Not a shot from this standpoint. I want to get y'all back to Raleigh, get y'all to the house. We can enjoy ourselves at some point.
Okay. Why don't we do the show from the backyard? We'll just do the show from the backyard one day or something.
Boo.
I'm all in.
Boo, I have begged on the air. I am so tired of being locked in this basement since March of 2020. we kid around.
No kidding.
That the Packer and Durham credit card hasn't even been – it's dusty. I mean, we have done nothing. Nothing since March of 2020. We are ready to hit the road. It's what we're ready to do.
I was going to say, that moth in your wallet's been asleep for a while. Anyway.
He's not even that moth is like, yeah, right, great. Pac's going nowhere fast. He's going to hang right here and do nothing. Zero. So when are you going
back home? I'll write a letter.
I'll
write a letter to the new commissioner and see what we can do.
Well, we're trying. I mean, I'm trying to hook up with Phillips for that, too. By the way, are you going back to Omaha? And if so, what's the plan there? What's your story?
Yeah, I'm going to head back. We got some things going on here. I'm going to head back in a couple of days and get back out there and be able to, you know, be with the fans. And you know, it's amazing the number of people that have called and asked for tickets. But, you know, they've been engaged for years. And we've been waiting for this moment. And our moment's right in front of us and couldn't be happier with our chances.
Very cool. Well, great. Great seeing you again, as always.
All right. Y'all the best.
Mom be well, my man. Thanks, as always.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday. NC State goes tomorrow. Virginia goes tonight. They're taking on number 2 Texas. Wes, we've made a lot of parallels between what this Virginia team has done in terms of back against the wall, let's go play, go grind, and the 2015 version that went on to win the national championship.
Exactly right. And maybe somebody who can lock us in on the similarities is one of the great stars of Virginia's national title run 6 years ago. Daniel Pinero was a tremendous shortstop in his career at the University of Virginia, has been involved in professional baseball ever since, and joins us this morning from Florida. I know you got to be having flashbacks to 14 and 15 watching the Cavaliers this last week or so, Daniel.
Yeah, no, it's a hell of a group to watch. By the way, thank you guys for having me on this show. It's a hell of a group to watch. Obviously, you know, you guys talked about it already, how it correlates with our 2015 team a little bit. But yeah, no, it's always fun to watch the College World Series. It just brings back a lot of good memories and that atmosphere and all the fans and, you know, my teammates and coaches and all that stuff. It was a lot of fun.
Baseball players have a interesting mindset, I think, versus us as fans, where, hey, you know what? There's tomorrow. We keep playing. What happened yesterday is old news. Let's go. And never has that been maybe more emphasized than what happened to Virginia the other night against Mississippi State in a game that you got a no-hitter in the eighth inning. You're thinking, hey, let's just close the deal, put ourselves in cruise control. But it's never easy, is it, Daniel? But what happened yesterday is a million years ago. That's got to be the mindset as a baseball player.
Yeah, no, it definitely has to be. You can't change the past. You know, we were in that position a little bit with Vanderbilt when we played them in 2015 and 2014. You just got to move on, and you got another game to win. And this is a must-win, obviously. It's an elimination game against a good Texas team. And, yeah, let's just move on to the next one and kind of capitalize on the moments you got. And just don't give any runs away. So, and make every out. So that's just how it has to be. Just grind. You got to grind.
Daniel, I remember when you arrived in Charlottesville, and obviously the 3 years you were there, you guys had incredible success. What is it kind of about Brian O'Connor that when it gets to this stage, it seems he becomes really calm? Even the other night when it felt like the house was kind of on fire, he just kind of walks out there, you know, very subtle, nothing, no dramatics. It's just kind of matter of fact, I guess.
Well, no, he always keeps his calm. You know, he's collective and, you know, and calm. And it's just he tries to communicate with the guys in a way that, you know, you got to be intense. You got to be serious. And as you said, it's on to the next game, you know, win or lose. You know, he's still going to love his players and support us in any way. I don't know. It's just something about, you know, he's great. He's great. He's a great coach and during the season as well. And obviously you guys see the, you know, the playoff records and stuff like that. When you get to Omaha, it's just, he's very calm and collective. And he knows what he's doing and he's there for a reason.
Daniel, when you're watching this game tonight, do you take that approach or are you just absolutely, I'm sitting in my lucky chair. I got all these superstitions. Don't talk to me. I'm screaming at the TV. I mean, what's it like as a former player that won the national championship in Virginia, watching the Hoos trying to do it again? What's that like for you right now?
It's really cool, honestly. Again, it's very similar to when we won it. I had those nerves. We all had those nerves. And when we were going through that run and, you know, the terrible season we had and then to get hot at the right time, you know, it's very similar. And, you know, obviously it's a lot easier watching it from a couch than playing shortstop out there. So I feel like the guys are excited. You know, it's a lot of excitement in those games, especially elimination game. It's very intense. And that's just the way it has to be in order to, and then you got to capitalize again. But yeah, sitting over here in my couch is definitely a lot easier.
All right. So two part question here. One, what's the mentality today? Do you remember the elimination days leading into games in Omaha? What were those days like? Because you guys, I think, had one in the bracket. I know you had one in the championship series, I think both years. What are those days like for players today?
Well, they're, you know, you wake up in the morning and you know it's that day, it's the biggest game of your life at that point. You know, when you're on that stage at the College World Series, it is the biggest game of your life. Mm-hmm. It's intense. You know, you wake up, you go through your daily routine. You know, some guys obviously have superstitions, you know, on and off the field. They go through their mm-hmm. routines, and it's again, it's baseball. There's always a routine. Everyone has their own routine, and you try to take every day the same. No matter the mm-hmm. situation, what game it is, game one or, you know, the last game. So, everyone sticks with their routines because that's what's gotten them that far. So, why change it? But obviously, you know, there's intense moments, before, during the game, and you're locked in. That's definitely, you know, the lights are on you and there's thousands of people watching you and you're locked in. So, you know, you want to win that game.
All right. Here's the thing Pac and I have found out from former players as we've been doing this show both on radio and now that we've been on television a couple of years. Tell me about the group text during games, because I know there's a group text during games of former players. First of all, how many are in the group text? Are you using the WhatsApp? Because sometimes they get so big that you got to use the WhatsApp. But how big's the group text and what's that like during the game?
Well, you know, there's a bunch of guys. It just brings back a lot of memories of the words, that we said when we were over there. There's a lot of good personalities, different personalities, funny ones, you know, some serious ones. But yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas is what that is. That's the answer to that question.
But at the end of the day, everyone is definitely watching and yeah. supporting the Hoos yeah. and their run, and that's what matters most. So,
Daniel, we've heard from a lot of fans. We just talked to Boo Corrigan, who's athletic director at NC State, who went out to Omaha for the first time and was blown away by it. I have said this 100 times if I said it once on radio or TV. Anybody that goes to Omaha, whether you're a baseball fan or not, when you get home, you'll go, you know what? That was an incredible experience. I've never met anybody that didn't enjoy it. From a player's perspective, what is that like? I mean, it seems from our perspective that the players are treated like gods. Seriously, as soon as you get off the plane in Omaha, that the whole city embraces you. Obviously, your fans do. But it really is a celebration of baseball when you get to Omaha.
Yeah, I mean it's the big leagues of college baseball. When you get there, obviously, obviously everyone's paying attention to you, and the College World Series does a great job with the players, the fans, the interactions, the camera, TV people, everything. It's amazing the way they do it. I was talking about that the other day. It's just really cool. It's really different from playing back in, if you're at UVA or another school, probably not Mississippi State because they're pretty rowdy. It's just crazy how they put everything together, and it's, bright lights, big stadium, thousands of fans, even off the field with the tents and you can go buy some, t-shirts, clothes, hats, whatever it is. And you interact with the fans. Obviously, you see what Steven Schock is doing with the fans off the field with the whole Dippin' Dots thing. So it's pretty cool.
I got to ask you, the personalities around your team, you guys were kind of the personification of everything O'Connor had built, right, leading up to the 14-15 appearances. Was there a shock type personality on your team? Cause I was doing games and I remember you playing and Pavin Smith and all these guys, y'all just seemed very businesslike. Was there a shock personality that never came out during that whole deal?
Yeah. I mean, we all had different personalities. As I said, Ernie Clement was one. he's a really,
okay.
really fun personality. When you get to that stage, everyone wants one thing, and that's to win, College World Series. Obviously, off the field, we're still joking around, hanging with each other, having fun. That's the main thing. When you step on that field, everyone's got one goal, and you don't want to be that guy kind of messing up that goal by, you know, messing around a little bit. So,
yeah.
You know, it's serious, you know, but also have fun with it, obviously, in your own way, kind of. But I, you know, I just remember being on the field and I was like, you know, it's go time. Let's go. Let's win this thing. You know, I'm not trying to lose. So, cause I already lost, we already lost in 2014. So we're not trying to do that again.
Daniel, for the game tonight against Texas, knowing what's on the hill for the Horns, what's the one thing Virginia has to do tonight from a baseball perspective? And you know the game inside and out, but what do you want to see tonight that Virginia has to get tonight to get the W and move on?
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a very close game. You know, Texas is a very good team. I think, you know, we talked about this before, is capitalize on those small opportunities. You know, even on defense, run around first base, get that ground ball, get that double play. Don't let the guy get, you know, don't let him get him over to second base on a bunt. Just little things. That's what matters in these games. And, you know, that's what I remember from playing, you know, in the College World Series. It was those little things. That's what win you ball games. You know, everyone tries to hit the home run and all that stuff. That park is pretty big, so it's a little tougher. But, yeah, it's those little things, throwing strikes. You got to throw strikes, you know, get those ground balls, hitting, move the runner over, battle, make the pitcher throw a lot of pitches. That's what win you ball games as well. Get into that bullpen. You know, I don't know how deep the Texas bullpen is right now after these games, but just make the pitcher pitch. Make them make mistakes and capitalize on them. Those little things go a long way.
Always fun to watch you play at Virginia. We wish you the best as you keep the pro grind going, man. Get healthy and look forward to seeing you soon.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham, very, very busy pre-power hour. Dave Clawson, head football coach of Wake Forest. He knows X's, O's, and food. He joins us coming up in about 10 minutes. Dave Clawson.
Thanks to Daniel Pinero, by the way. That was great stuff. Member of the Canadian national team. Still trying to get that pro dream alive. It was with Toledo this year. And it was in Florida rehabbing a bit of an injury, so we wish him back to health as soon as possible. Great, great player on the Virginia teams that went to the World Series in 14 and 15, and just a talented guy, by the way. Looking forward to watching his career develop as he continues that grind. Toughest championship. I think we're watching it. I think winning this is as hard as winning the and I think the college football playoff, by the way, has kind of superseded the March Madness pack. Because I think to win the college football national championship, you gotta have it built almost before the season starts. But this right here, this gets you in a lot of different ways. You get upsets in the regionals, you get upsets in the supers. And in many ways, if you go back and look at it, and I think I heard, was it yesterday on your show where you guys were talking about Fresno State's run where they had to win a game in the they had to win a game. I think Fresno State had to win their last regular season game a few years ago, then win the WAC tournament, and then get into the regionals. I think there were a 3 or 4 seed. They ultimately ended up winning the whole deal a few years ago. In the College World Series. That's just the kind of thing that I think catches your eye about how difficult this event is.
Well, it's my favorite one, number one. I do think it's the hardest one to win. But what I love about it the most is the fact that you can have a bad day and it doesn't eliminate you. You know, and I think at the end of the day, what that means is that the 8 teams that end up in Omaha, kind of like the final 4 teams in whatever sport you're in, you get the best teams. And I know Arkansas was awesome this year, but you know what? Arkansas couldn't beat NC State. And that's what it matters. You know, you're at home, you got to close the deal. If you don't close the deal, you can't blame anybody. That's on you. So I think by the time you get to Omaha, those 8 that are standing are all good. And every single one of them truly believes we're going to win it all. We're here to win it all. And, you know, unfortunately, there's always two. There are going to be two in barbecue this year was Arizona and Tennessee. But, I mean, just look at the quality of the competition this week in the games. I mean, nothing is easy. And I suspect, like, well, Daniel Pinheiro just told us, he expects this game to be close tonight. I think he's probably right. Texas and Virginia. And, you know, left standing, hey, go jump on Mississippi State when you're in the mood. And NC State and Vanderbilt tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock. These are really talented teams. And you're going to, and if you love baseball, the dudes you're watching now, you're going to watch them in major leagues, boys. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, the talent level here is spectacular. But I think this is the hardest championship to win, Wes. And from start to finish, and I think it's the fairest one, too. Not only is it the toughest, I think it's the fairest. And that's a great combination.
All right. Okay, here are a couple notes on this. The College World Series expanded back in the 99 season. That's when it went from, what was it, 48 to 64, I guess, Pac, in terms of the teams. They changed the regionals, all those type deals. So since then, there have been 14 different national champions. In the same time frame, there have only been 11 different national champions in football and 13 in men's basketball.
I would have.
I don't know if that matters, but there's the graph.
You know, if you would have asked me that question, I would have probably been wrong in answering it. I didn't think it would be that close, to be honest with you. But it goes to show you, too, you've had, you know, dynasty runs in football. You've seen great teams win multiple national championships in basketball. We certainly know it here in this league. And not some leagues can't say that, but we can. And baseball. Again, 14, and again, the Hoos won it in 15, and they're trying to win another one. NC State trying to win their first. So I just love it. I just think it's great. And even folks that aren't baseball nuts, you can get hooked on this stretch run in Omaha because the games, like I said, are so unbelievably competitive.
Do you buy that – okay, you mentioned the football dynasty. Certainly we've seen repeats since 99 in basketball. We've seen some repeats in baseball. Obviously, not as many. There have been more champions. But the gaps in the events and the kind of events that they are, what are the similarities? I mean, you mentioned once you get to the Final Four, it feels like the way you get to the College World Series. To me, football is a grind game one all the way through if you're going to get to the Final Four of the CFP as we currently know it, though.
Well, right. I mean, but, you know, everyone's got its own characteristics. And I think there would be people that would argue when it comes to college football, quite frankly, there's only a handful of teams that can win a national championship. I would tell you today, as we're sitting here a month away from the ACC kickoff, make a list right now, if you're a college football junkie, and we all are, of how many teams have a legitimate chance to win the national championship. I think you'd probably get to six or seven, and then you'd scratch your head and go, well, maybe. You know, that's it. I think if you did this with baseball, man, your list would be maybe two dozen teams. Mm. And that's why I think it's harder to win the deal in baseball. When it comes to basketball, I think it would be much more than six or seven. To me, football is the one that's got the shortest, narrowest list. And is it the most popular? Yeah. It is. I'm not knocking it, but I'm just telling you, I mean, if we're sitting having a real conversation today about, hey, who can win the national championship, big picture, I mean, you'd go back to what you've been saying for the last 4 or 5 years. It's Bama, it's Clemson, it's Ohio State, it's Georgia, it's Oklahoma. You want to sprinkle in an LSU every now and then? Okay, that's fine. They've made the tournament once. I mean, where's the list? Notre Dame? I mean, they made it twice.
Yeah.
I think there's only five teams that have made it to the playoff multiple times. Five. That's it. We've got 130 to play. Yeah. So I don't think that list is very long. That doesn't mean somebody can't, you know, knock the door down and surprise you. But, hey, we, you know, how often does that happen? Not very. So I just think there's only a handful of teams that can really win it in football. Baseball, to me, is a totally different animal.
Yeah.
Totally different beast.
Yeah. Well, and as NC State and Virginia have proven, you can get hot at the right time, second half of the regular season. You don't necessarily have to win your conference championship, and you can hold off elimination in the case of Brian O'Connor in Virginia, or you can go to very difficult ports of call, Ruston, Louisiana, and Fayetteville, Arkansas in the case of NC State, and find success that ultimately gets you to the College World Series.
That's right.
I mean, it's doable in so many different ways. And That's the other great storyline that's playing out for the two ACC schools for sure this week.
Well, that's what I said. Not only is it the toughest, it's the fairest. You know, you've got to earn your right to be one of those teams, right? And I still go back to why Pitt didn't get in and Alabama did, but that's old news, whatever. But you got to earn your right to get into the dance. And when you do, it doesn't matter what that number is. It doesn't matter if you host or not. Now, would you like to do it like most of these SEC teams? Sure. But you know what? They've earned that right because, number one, they put up the money, they made the commitment, and their teams are good. That's how this works. So you've got to go play baseball. And, you know, NC State didn't have any home games. They had to go to Ruston, Louisiana. Louisiana Tech's out of sight, especially at home. They had to go to number one Arkansas. Yeah, like I said earlier, nobody's touched the Hogs this year. NC State did. So they've done it the old-fashioned way. And look at Virginia. How many home games they have in the postseason? Yep. That would be zero. In fact, they never left Columbia, South Carolina for 2 weeks. You know, regional and super regional. They were stuck down there in Columbia in 99-degree weather and 165% humidity and grinded. So you get to earn your right to get to Omaha. And when you do, everybody that shows up is really good and talented. Whether you go 0-2 in barbecue or whether or not you hold the trophy at the end of the day. To me, it's the fairest, best NCAA championship of them all.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Tomorrow, T-shirt Friday. I got something for all of you tomorrow. All right, let's bring on the head football coach.
You're excited about it, huh?
I am.
You got excited about your choice tomorrow for T-shirt Friday?
It's topical given what's been going on in Omaha. That's all I'm going to tell you. But our next guest is the head football coach at Wake Forest. As I said earlier, he talks X, O's, and food in that order. Coach Dave Clawson, Winston-Salem. All right, Coach, how we doing? We got folks showing up on campus. Restaurants are opening. I got to figure you've been a busy, busy man here the last couple of weeks.
It's been a good month. After not being able to host recruits and having them on campus, you know, for almost 15, 16 months, we're now having visitors almost every day. And we have these great new facilities, and we can finally show them off to future players. So it's been a busy month, but a productive month. And again, it's been great to be able to meet with people face to face again. So you definitely feel that things are getting better.
Hey, Dave, Boo Cargan was with us earlier from NC State, and I joked with him. I remember 5 years ago when June was a slow month. Nothing happened in June. And now all of a sudden, everything has happened in the month of June. You're not the first coach to tell us that recruiting has been interesting. Has it been overwhelming? Might be a better question.
I wouldn't say overwhelming because I think we were expecting it. But I would say it's kind of like speed dating, I guess. That typically in recruiting, you know, we would have juniors visit in January. And then, you know, February became a dead period. And then there was like this kind of a slow drip that you'd start getting players in March and try to get them to a basketball game. And they'd start slowly committing. And that would go into April and May. And then June, you're almost finishing the class. And now I would say typically what happened in the months of January, March, April, May, and June have all happened in June. So the turnaround, the speed of commitments, just instead of people coming on weekends, it's every day. And we were expecting this. You know, there was so long that players couldn't visit, and there was just this backlog, and the second June 1st hit and they could visit. But like I said, it's been great. It's been fun. I think we're back into the swing of things, and it feels like things are getting back to normal. The speed and intensity of it have picked up, but I think this will be a one-year aberration. You know, next year when they can visit, you know, during the year, I think it'll go back to the way it was.
I know you have been very, very candid with a lot of folks, and I respect it, number one, but about the roster management and all the things that are going on here with scholarships and the waiver years and everything else. You've said a lot of really bright things that I hope other people are listening to, because there is going to be some impact here, some backup here, if you will. Now that you're kind of into it and getting ready to kind of count it all up, How does it impact the rising senior in high school in your mind that you're trying to recruit to Wake Forest? Do you have to look at a lot of different outlets here and say, okay, we need to calm down this, look at this? How does it work?
Yeah, it just it puts you a little bit in an ethical dilemma as you have this really good high school player that's a great fit for your school, you know, for Wake Forest, and fits us personnel-wise, fits us academically, fits us character-wise. And this is a guy that 10 out of 10 years you would offer, and you have to be conservative about it because you have no idea on your current roster how many of those players are going to want to come back for a fifth or a sixth year that they're able to. And, you know, you just, you know, certain schools, it doesn't seem to be holding them back. Other schools are clearly much more conservative with it. Because you never want to have to make the phone call in December of, oops, I'm sorry that we took your commitment, but, you know, we had a senior who's been with us 5 years that wants to come back for an extra year. There's no good way about it. So we're being conservative with it. You know, we might be losing a couple players because of it. But, you know, I just think, you know, to take a commitment from a young man and then at some point down the road say, geez, I'm sorry, we have a guy coming back. We never want to be in that position. So if we lose a few players now because of it, and we don't have to make that phone call, that's something that we're comfortable with, and we'll just have to live with this year. But this problem isn't going away. This is going to be a four-year problem because every single player on our roster got an extra year of eligibility. So I don't, for half our players, I don't even know what year in school they are anymore. I don't know what their eligibility is. It could be one of two classes. And you don't know what's going to happen with them. And, you know, I just find it ironic that we can get no answers on this problem that every coach is going through. And then another branch of college football is going to add two more games. You know, it's just, how do you do both? You know, it's just in with the transfer portal, the average school in the country lost 12 players to the portal. And there's still a limit of signing 25. Well, if you're signing 25 and losing 12, how are you ever going to get back to 85? And these things are just festering and sitting. And it just doesn't seem like anybody wants to do anything about it. So it's, you know, at some point, you know, the rubber's going to meet the road with this and people are going to have to make decisions. But everybody who does what we do for a living, and coaches players and recruits and manages rosters, know that this problem is going to hit us very quickly.
Coach, two things. Number one, in all the years I've been doing this, I don't think I've ever heard a coach make the analogy of recruiting and speed dating being tied in together. That's a unique concept. Maybe for another show, we'll get into that even further. Maybe that'd be something for In Play to look into. I'm not sure. But nevertheless, that's got my head spinning one way. I want to switch gears on you a little bit. College football playoff for a school like Wake Forest, going to 12, if we get there, that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think with everything, it's not always as simple as, is it a good thing? Yes. I think for our players, when I brought this up to them, the idea that you can get to November and let's say it was 2019 and we were 7-1 and ranked 17th, 18th in the country. It's now not, boy, this is a nice little story in the ACC. This is a national story. We are now competing to be in the college football playoff. You know, we had a game a few years ago in 17 that we played NC State and they were 12th or 14th in the country. And, you know, Truist Stadium was sold out and was on national TV and it was an electric atmosphere. And that game had a lot to do with the ACC standings and what bowls you're going to. Fast forward to a 12 game playoff. You know, that game is now to maybe be the 9th, 10th, 11th seed in the playoff game. So I think it gives us a chance to have games of national significance later in the season. And, you know, to be very honest with you, if you're in the ACC Atlantic or SEC West, your access to the playoffs has been really difficult. Nobody has done it better during the playoff era than Alabama and Clemson. And those have been the two top programs. And if you're in the ACC Atlantic, it's a very high standard to get there, and that's a credit to Dabo and Clemson and what they've done. So, yes, that would be exciting. The down part of it is, as soon as the playoffs went from 2 to 4 games, you saw a little bit of a de-emphasis with the bowl games. I mean, when we got here, the Orange Bowl was the ultimate goal. If you could ever get to the Orange Bowl, and that was a big goal in our team meeting room, let's become an Orange Bowl team. And then when you see things like North Carolina make the Orange Bowl and their top 4 players sit out, or Florida makes the Cotton Bowl, which is a great, historic, elite bowl, and they basically send a JV team there. I can't help imagine that when the playoffs go to 12, that those bowl games aren't in greater risk of being de-emphasized. And I think that's really sad. When we went to the Military Bowl in 16, that was the first bowl that our players had been to in their career here. And to win that game and host the trophy and the celebration in the locker room, and also the educational experience of it. A lot of our players had never been to Washington, D.C., and to see our nation's capital and the monuments. And then fast forward 3 years later, we're in New York City, and half our team had never been to New York City. And to take them to a show on Broadway or to where the World Trade Centers were, the 9/11 Memorial, you know, the playoff games are great and they're incredibly exciting for a fan base. But there's still a part of college football that the whole bowl experience is special. And I've been in 1AA, and I've been in FCS, and I've been part of a playoff system. And it's great, but it's different than the bowls. It's football. You go to a place, you play a game, you fly home. The bowl experiences are incredible, and I just get very worried. And you've already seen it when it went from 2 to 4, that if you go from 4 to 12, what's going to happen with those games? And I think that would be bad for college football and the student-athlete experience. And again, I've been doing this 33 years. I'm a little bit on the, I've seen both as a 1AA FCS head coach and now a Power 5 head coach. I think when people talk, the championship, yes, but to miss bowl experiences, I think would be really, really sad. It's such an incredible experience for our team.
It's going to be really intriguing to see, number one, how that progresses, and then the feedback that we're going to get from guys like yourself that are in the business that say, hey, let me give you the good and the bad, because there's always a two-way, it's a two-way street here. You got to work amongst whatever the guardrails are going to be to try to get this thing off the ground. Will there be more money? Of course there will be, or you don't do it. And what's the trickle-down effect on the sport? And you just laid it out to perfection of how that thing's going to trickle down. And, it's going to be access, interesting to watch.
Access is great. I mean, the amount of games in November that will have a national storyline is going to go way, way up.
Right.
But you're going to lose something, too. And in our experience at Wake Forest, we have had incredible bowl experiences. The Military Bowl, the Pinstripe Bowl, the Birmingham Bowl was a great experience for our football team. And you go down there and you game plan and the game plan's in and the players get to bond and hang out and go to dinners together. And it's just, again, you're not going to be able to do that with the playoffs. And so you're gaining something. And obviously there's a lot of money to be made. And I think it's fun to have access, but to think that you're not also giving something up is very short-sighted.
Before we let you go, would be remiss if I did not ask, because like I said, it's all about X's, O's, and food. Since our last gathering, new restaurant, you working on something new in the kitchen. What do you have for us?
I don't know anything new. It's just been fun to be able to have players over to your house again. So last night, I'm going to make a little shout out to my daughter, Courtney. My wife was out of town and we had a bunch of our new players over, and my daughter made a phenomenal lasagna. I mean, she learned from my wife and man, she nailed it. So it was, we had lasagna, we had a salad, and that's always a favorite. So we haven't had, we only make it when we have players over. So I have not enjoyed that meal in almost 2 years. So I'm going to give a little shout out to my daughter, Courtney, on that one.
And you know what else is great about lasagna, Coach?
Way to go, Courtney.
Let me tell you what else is great about lasagna. Next morning, lasagna is best for breakfast. And I like it cold. And I'll eat it cold for breakfast. It is so good. It is so good. When it's done right, layered just right, it is the best. That and cold pizza for breakfast, cannot beat it. Can't beat it.
There you go, Coach. That's what I'm with every morning. Something different for breakfast, and it's not conventional. How's that?
And it's not not something involving oatmeal either, I gather, from our pre-production meeting.
Get that out. Get that oatmeal. That stuff will kill you.
In our pre-production meeting, you found out there's no oatmeal. Dave Clawson, we'll see you in Charlotte next month. Stay well, and look forward to visiting then, okay?
Okay. Thanks so much, guys. Great to see you.
You got it.
You bet. One of our favorites, Coach Clawson from Wake Forest. Stay tuned. Full Power Hour coming up, including national champion in tennis. That's right. Another national champion in the ACC.
It can't be a Full Power Hour because we're
already national player. I'm sorry.
Get it right, Wes. Come on. Yeah. Get it right.
Go ahead.
It can't be a Full Power Hour.
Estella Perez Samariba will be here.
All right, you got that part right. Here it is.
Estella Perez Samariba is going to be here.
From Portugal.
And it's the Power Hour. Yeah, from Portugal. And she's the National Player of the Year by ITA.
Correct.
But we've already had a Power Hour. Yeah, there you go.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.